some
flies.
What's this all? Anyway.
Are you looking for?
I think it's seen we're all set up here. I'm not going to sit in front of
this. We'll put it on the side.
Yeah.
What is this new deal here? Space to walk around in.
Yeah, that's much better.
That's much better. Even a little. Yeah, now you're proper.
Okay, welcome back from your break. Who was looking for the Sanskrit dictionary?
Whoever it was has disappeared. In any case, Krishna Balaram has on his computer the BBT Sanskrit dictionary. Monier Williams, whoever wants to get it can get it from him. Okay. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Padaya Vijayashini Devotee. How are we doing, by the way? You getting what you're looking for in this class?
And more.
Getting your money's worth.
There's something you feel you're missing, or something that we're not touching upon or doing. Are we okay? Tell me. Is there something you want me to concentrate more on, or something that you feel we're skipping over, or something that's not happening? Okay, then I don't want to hear any complaints from you later, okay? Okay, we are starting the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada has explained that the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita can be divided into three. 6, 6, and 6.
Mama, when are you going
to go to Chikras? So 6, 6, and 6. What's the topic of the first 6 chapters? And the last 6? And the middle? Okay. So Prabhupada gives a couple of examples that pertain to this. Someone know?
Spiritual sandwich?
Yes. In a sandwich, want to explain?
I'll let you.
In a sandwich, you've got the bread on both sides and the stuff is in the middle. So in the Bhagavad Gita, you've got karma yoga and jnana yoga, but the essence, bhakti yoga, is in the middle 6 chapters. Or another example Prabhupada gave is that with a book, you have the front cover and the back cover, and the substance is in the middle. So the essence of Bhagavad Gita is devotional service, bhakti yoga, and therefore it's nestled in the middle. Or like you have your laptop bags, you know, the foam on both sides and the laptops in the middle.
Now I understand.
Now you understand, yeah. Books are out, covers and books and all that. What do we have to do with that? Okay, so this, yes?
He gives an explanation for this, that in order to fully understand bhakti yoga, we need to know also the other yoga systems. So what is the explanation of that? Does that mean?
Bhagavad Gita, you're getting a lot of different subjects. You're getting yoga, you're getting jnana, you're getting essentially the essence of the Upanishads. You're getting a lot of topics dealt with, so that one will know the true value of devotional service and its superiority over any other approach.
So that's what I mean. You can understand.
Otherwise, you learn about devotional service, but somebody says, "Yeah, but you don't know about yoga," or somebody says, "But yeah, but you don't know about jnana."
Yeah.
So here, in the context of jnana, in the context of yoga, we're getting the highest yoga system, the conclusion of jnana. Everything is being fully presented. Otherwise, Krishna, why did he have to tell Arjuna about any of this other stuff? He could have just said surrender. But he's surveying the field and giving the conclusion. It's like sometimes we give advice, say, well, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this, 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 or this, or this. But I think you should do, you know, considering this, this. Just like Uddhava, we were reading last night, he was advising Krishna. There was a question whether, should we kill Jarasandha first, or should we go do the Rajasuyas first? Jarasandha? Yeah, Jarasandha. You know, what should we do first? And then he analyzed, well, on the one side, it would be good to kill Jarasandha, he's a lot of trouble, but on the other hand, you want to do the Rajasuya. But on the other hand, you can't do the Rajasuya until you've killed everybody else who's a possible contender, so so in that way. Okay. Any other question about that? Yes?
Is Bhakti Yoga considered mystic yoga, mysticism?
Well, is it considered mysticism? What do you mean by mysticism?
But I'm looking at the six.
Six.
637. And thus does not attain perfection.
Aprapya yoga samsiddha. There Prabhupada is using it, if it's Prabhupada's word, as yoga. Prabhupada, as far as I've seen, was rather not very fond of this word mysticism, especially as it pertained to bhakti yoga. He didn't seem to like it very much. I think he associated it with hocus pocus and you know, the idea that you're going to experience something and it's going to be, you know, rather than something systematic and scientific. Prabhupada didn't like the idea that devotional service was simply something sentimental or something mystical. You know, he said, I had a mystical experience. What does it mean? It means, you know, it's just one of those, something you can't, it's just... But Prabhupada wanted to present a systematic process, systematic discipline, science, as he would say. So he wasn't very fond of this mysticism word, although he sometimes used it. He mostly used it in connection with what he called mystic yoga, where you do some austerities and you get some powers. That's where he most often uses it. But you can say that devotional service is the perfection of mysticism or the perfection of yoga. Okay? Anything else?
That mystic yoga, which you said, that's a
branch out
from Ashtanga yoga?
No. Ashtanga yoga, but as explained by Lord Kapildeva in the third canto, getting involved in mystic powers basically means getting stuck. Because the purpose of yoga...
Getting out of yoga.
Yeah, the purpose of yoga is to realize the Supreme. So if you get all glued to mystic powers, look what I can do. You've been deviated, essentially.
It's a fall down.
Yeah, it's an obstacle, let's say. You haven't necessarily fallen down, but you're not going up anymore. You're stuck, you know, with mystic powers and creating planets and...
Blowing heads.
Yeah, you know, bewildering people's minds and all of that. All right, we're ready? Turning back. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Maya Saktamana Partha Yogam Yunjan Marashraya Asam Shayam Samagram Mam Yata Gyasisi Tachchanu. Maya Saktamana Gyasisi. Now you should hear about and try to know Gyasisi Tachchanu by hearing how you can be attached to me, maya saktamana, how your mind can be attached to me, madashraya, taking shelter of me, yogam yunjan, in practice of yoga, asamshayam, samagram, completely freed from all doubts. And Prabhupada in the purport, quotes especially from Srimad Bhagavatam, and there, relevantly, of course, the entire process is relevant. Shrinvatam, touch Shrinu, how the whole process begins with hearing, the process of devotional service. And it ends, or at least in this sequence of verses, it culminates in Chidyante Sarva Sankshaya. When one reaches the advanced stage, then Sarva Samshaya, all doubts are Chidyante. They're cut to pieces. Krishna proposes to Arjuna, you hear from me, and you'll find out how your mind can be completely attached to me, and you'll be free from all doubt. Chidyante Sarva Samshaya. Any questions here?
Does this word not Shrinu, the process of hearing, it is specially prescribed over here because Lord Krishna is going to speak about devotional service? As devotional service starts with ninefold of activities.
I don't know that that's so. Has he said earlier anything about hearing? Later he'll talk about hearing again. Shrinu me paramam vachaha. Where's that? Hitakamyaya. That's no. Vakshami Hitakamyaya. I don't know that here he's specifically saying touch Shrinu because I'm going to speak about devotional service. After all, he wants Arjuna to hear in the second chapter, in the third chapter, in all the chapters. But Srila Prabhupada specifically focuses now on devotional service even more deeply than he has in previous chapters, because that's the topic now in these middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita.
So the spelling is wrong.
Hitakamyaya?
Hitakamyaya.
Bhakshami Hitakamyaya?
Yes. This is 10-1.
10-1, okay. So that will come up later also. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gyanam teham sabhigyanam. Idam bhakshami asheshataha. Yaj gatva na iha bhuyon yaj gatavyam avishishite. Gyanam teham sabhigyanam. What is gyana? Knowledge. And what's vigyana? What's the difference between jnana and vijnana?
One is theoretical, one is spiritual.
One is theoretical and the other spiritual?
Experiential.
Experiential, okay. One is experienced knowledge, good. How would you characterize jnana then, just as knowledge? How do you get knowledge without experience?
Theory,
yeah. You read a book, you get the theory. There's some knowledge there. But vijnana means realized knowledge. What's realized knowledge?
Totally convinced about it. You cannot be shaken from there.
I can be completely convinced about a theory.
Application.
Application. What does that mean, actually, application? What does it mean in practical terms?
Applying knowledge and practice it in your life.
Yeah, you can do something with it. Like surgery. I can read a book and have real knowledge about surgery. I can be convinced about the various techniques about surgery. Would you want to have me do an operation on you?
Do a spiritual one.
Put my hands on you and do that spiritual surgery, yeah. There's a very interesting article that was published. Was it an article? It's either an article or a book excerpt from a surgeon who's a very, very good writer. And he was explaining, it's called The Learning Curve, I think. He's talking about, as a surgeon, how he's a heart surgeon, I think. You have to put a certain kind of needle in and get it just right in a certain place in the patient. And the first time he tried to do it, you know, he watched it done, and the first time he had to do it, and he left out the first step that you're supposed to do this thing first of all, and he blew that, and he was all red in the face, and then the guy came in and no, you'd have to do this. And then the next time he did it, he got that right, but then he couldn't get the needle in exactly the right place, and he tried again. And now he's like, you know, it goes in every time. No problem. But now he's working on, you know, some advanced technique where, you know, he's just kind of learning it. So that's what Vigyan is. It's applied knowledge, realized knowledge. It means that you can do it. It's not just theory. Prabhupada explained another time that realized knowledge is knowledge that you can explain in your own words. You know, like you ask somebody, what does this verse mean? And the person says, oh, best of the crews. And he, you know, spits it back to you word for word. And you say, well, what does it mean? He says, oh, best of the crews, hear from me now. You know, he can't explain what it means. He can just recite it perfectly for a test or something. So realized knowledge means that you can explain it in your own words.
Assimilated.
Prabhupada said that about, he said if the articles are too difficult to read, it means that the writers are not realized. Prabhupada said they like my books because it's realized knowledge. You know, like a really good surgeon or a really good doctor, you know, he's got all these technical terms in his head about, you know, ologies and areas and every kind of Latin term. He said, but you know, basically, you know, if you don't do this, then your bones are going to crack because they're too thin. It's like cement, where they've just used too much gravel and not enough mortar. You know, so, and that's like the distillation of all this technical jargon. But he's understood it in such a way that he could explain it even to a child. You know, a person who really understands something can explain to a kid what it is. And a person who's just got theoretical knowledge, you know, he knows, but he couldn't explain it, except by looking up in the book again and saying, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Maybe he could have a dictionary and look for smaller words, but he can't really explain it. A good mechanic, he knows what's wrong with your car and all the technical stuff, but he says, lady, your problem is that, you know, you got a lot of junk right in the pump there, and it's screwing up the whole system, and that's why the darn thing doesn't work. That's realized knowledge. And what do you have me to do then? You know, I got to get in there with a kind of a hose and flush the darn thing out. It doesn't have to be technical, you can understand it. Assimilated knowledge, realized knowledge, knowledge that you know so well that you could explain it in your own words without having to rely on the words that you read. Okay? So, Gyanam and Vigyana. Vigyana, vi means Vishishta, particular knowledge. Sometimes Prabhupada translates it that way. But realized knowledge, the higher stage of knowledge, where you've really got it. Gyanam and Vigyana. Sometimes Prabhupada takes it as material and spiritual. Usually he takes it as, he takes it as material and spiritual. Vigyanam is spiritual knowledge and Gyanam is material knowledge. Phenomenal. What's phenomenal mean? Yeah, it means having to do with phenomenon, with this world. So he takes Gyanam here to mean having to do with this world, and vijnanam as having to do with the spiritual world. Yes.
Sometimes science is called vijnanam.
You probably sometimes, yeah, translates vijnanam as science also, which is an interesting translation of vijnanam. Is vijnanam used that way in Indian languages?
In
Hindi and so on, vijnanam. Suppose, you know, they're giving like premier place to science. You know, if you've got science, it's vijnanam, and then you know, it's super, like, ultra knowledge. Science is ultra knowledge. So Prabhupada doesn't really buy it, that your mundane science is ultra knowledge. But he says, this is knowledge. This is the real ultra knowledge. Spiritual knowledge, vijnanam, scientific knowledge. Prabhupada's use, that you could do, somebody could do a doctoral dissertation on Prabhupada's use of the word science. He does, he takes it in interesting directions. Yes?
It's like the Indians, they're using vijnanam, science, flatter science. Prabhupada does exactly the opposite. He's using the word that is considered to be so creditable.
Yeah.
To apply it to what he knows is actually...
Exactly. Exactly. Rather than taking that Vishishta Gyan, particular knowledge, super knowledge, is this stuff that they do in laboratories, Prabhupada takes it that it means spiritual realization. Prabhupada also directed Bhaktivedanta Institute should have a journal, and they should call it Savvijnanam. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both. That's what he means by Gyan and Vijnan here.
I think he mentions in Life Comes from Life that science means to know things as they are. So scientific would be in the spiritual sense that you know it exactly by realization.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said you could do a doctoral dissertation on what Prabhupada means by science, what he says about science, with the whole, if you ever want to waste your life doing a doctoral dissertation, there's a topic for you. Shall we move on? Manusyanam sahasreshu kashchit yatati siddhaye. Manusyanam sahasreshu. Out of many thousands of men, kashchit means someone, yatati siddhaye, attains perfection. Who are these thousands of men? Huh? Karmis, Gyanis, all so many thousands of people who are doing this and that. Out of them, someone actually attains perfection. What's its perfection?
He knows Lord Krishna in truth.
No.
He knows me in truth.
No. Blew it. Got it wrong. Thousands of men. One attains perfection. What's perfection here?
Liberation.
Liberation. Means understanding I'm not this body, that I'm spirit soul. Get out of this whole karma thing. He knows his spiritual position. And because generally people, they're eating, they're sleeping, they're mating, they're defending, they're busy in karma and blah, blah, or useless mental speculations. But someone actually understands his spiritual identity. Yatatam. And out of those who are endeavoring in that way, Api Siddhanam, and those who've achieved perfection, Kaschit, someone, Mam Deiti Tatvataha. Out of many liberated souls, even, maybe one can understand it. That means understanding Krishna consciousness is the postgraduate stage of perfection. Perfection, that's already rare. Out of so many thousands of people. You know, what are they doing? They're slobs. You know, they're a slob. You know what a slob is?
Lazy bum.
Yeah, lazy bum. They're mostly lazy bums or hard-working bums. Yeah, they're just like animals, practically speaking, gratifying their senses. Out of them, somebody's actually serious about the truth. Out of them, somebody actually understands, I'm not this body, I'm spirit, soul. Out of them, someone understands Krishna. That's what's here. Any questions? Yes.
How can liberation be considered as perfection? Because to know Sri Bhagavan is perfection. So
how is liberation perfection? We thought that knowing Bhagavan was perfection.
Four of the liberations means that they already know Bhagavan.
That's another thing.
Liberation is perfection, but knowing Bhagavan is the highest perfection.
Yeah. Just like graduating from what we call high school in America, what do they call it in Europe?
College.
No. Not primary school. Secondary school. Graduation from secondary school, that's perfection. They give you a diploma, they say, you made it. Congratulations to you. Yeah, you can walk around and say, I'm a graduate, I've graduated from school, give me a job, I have an education. But out of so many people that say, yeah, but everybody's got an education, what's the big thing about you? And you say, no, I've got a college degree. Or taking it another way, and like in everybody these days, everybody goes to college, everybody's got a college degree. But out of so many who go to college, how many have PhDs? That's postgraduate. Everybody goes to some sort of college these days. They're all graduates. They know, that means they know something. But PhD, now he's... So that means this is the postgraduate stage of education. It's perfection to know that I'm not this body, but it's not the highest perfection. Okay? Anything else? Okay. And notice, kashchan mam veti tatvatah. Out of so many, only one knows me factually. There's so many, yes, I know what it is. There's lots of them. Yeah, everybody knows Krishna. Oh, yes, Krishna. But tatvataha, factually, or probably would say scientifically, in truth, to really know Krishna, question someone.
But even that is actually near knowing, not fully knowing, because nobody can fully understand Krishna.
Well, Krishna says, factually, truthfully. To mam tatvato gyatva, which says, actually, but not fully. Even Krishna doesn't know himself fully, but factually, to understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not one of the demigods, not an ordinary human being. There's so many who think so many things about Krishna, but one person maybe actually understands Krishna. Okay? Bhumirapo nalo vayu kammano buddhire vacha. Ahankara itiyam me, binna prakritirashtadha. These are Krishna's eight separated energies. What separated energy means? Means the material energy. What's it mean that it's separated? External. Good. Anything else you could say about it? What it means that it's separated energy? Yeah, we heard this material energy. Something else?
It is separating us from Krishna.
Yeah, but he doesn't say separating. He says separated. Good try, though.
Maya Shakti?
Yes, it's Maya Shakti. Indirectly, it's Krishna, yeah? He's not identical. Lauren says he's identical. Separated energy.
Because divided in three modes.
Yeah, but that's not what it means. Separated, you know, separated into parts, but it means separated from Krishna. How is it separated? Excuse me. Yeah, it's prakriti. Someone want to give a realized explanation? Okay, it's separated. It's, you know, relegated to the Maya department. Yes, it's inferior. It's relegated to the Maya department. Krishna himself doesn't really get involved with it. He hands it over to Maya and says, "You deal with these people." The Prabhupada gave the example, two examples. One he gave is the example of milk. He said milk is the separated energy of the cow. It's the cow's energy, but it's separated. And another example he gave is, he said, just like I'm now speaking, and you'll take this tape recording, and later you'll play it someplace else. So I won't be there, but I'll be there by the tape recording. So in this way, it's separated. But it's still my energy, but separated. It's still the cow's energy, it's still Prabhupada's energy, but separated. In this way, the material energy is going on. Mayam tadap samapaya. What is that? Tam upayashrayam. Maya is a little standing behind.
Oh, this is Bhagavatam?
Hmm. Yayo sammohito jiva.
Bhakti yoga namaste.
They both go together. Vyasadeva saw in his meditation the Krishna along with his external energy kind of a little ashamed and standing off to the side. That's separated energy. These days, you know, people get married and then they get separated. Separated means, in technical legal terms, that they're not quite divorced, but they're not together. There's still a relationship, they're still married, but separated means, you know, you go your way, I'll go mine. They're not really... You know, real marriage means you're together, you're doing everything together, and she's cooking and you're eating and, you know, all these things are going on. Separated means she's living someplace else, she's got her own apartment or something, you're living someplace else, and, you know, it's almost divorced but not quite. Yes?
So, in this context, Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, gives you a wonderful example. It's a prayer of Bhumi Devi to Varahadev. She is telling that Maya Buddhasa Chitchakta Kaivalya Sthita Atmani. You kicked out your external potency from your own abode by your eternal potency.
So the external energy is that energy which is kicked out of the spiritual world. It's external. As some of you said, it's the external energy, inferior energy. So this external energy has... eight parts, Ashtadha, which have two sections. What are the two sections? Gross and subtle. What are the gross ones? What are the gross and material energies? Earth, let's hear it. Cheer it out. And ether. Okay. And what's the progression there?
Subtle comes from gross to subtle.
From gross to subtle. Earth is the most gross, and ether is the most subtle. There's analysis, probably you got it in Nectar of Devotion, where it's compared to the rasas, where your earth has all the qualities. It has form, taste, sound, smell, and touch. And then... in water, you subtract smell, and earth, water, fire, air. So earth, water, so fire, you subtract taste. Then air, you subtract form. Then ether, you subtract
sound.
Minus sound. No, touch.
Touch
is, you yeah, lose yeah, touch. Sound is there in ether. Sub decay, purusha. So ether is the most subtle. Even if you go into the sciences, you know, earth science, they can pick up the science, the earth, and analyze it and look at it. Once you're into aeronautics, it's more subtle. You're dealing with something you can't even see. You know, earth, you can see it. Air, what can you see? It's more subtle. And ether, you know, they're still debating about whether it exists. Good question. Ether. Where are all these elements described in more detail?
Third canto.
Third canto. By whom? Hildev. And how does he describe them? What does he say? Why do you have to describe them? Or what do you do to describe them? He says, I'll talk about their qualities and where, you know, what qualities one has that the other doesn't. That's how you differentiate one thing from another. You know, this one records and that one doesn't, you know, two MP3 recorders. So one has a quality that the other doesn't. So that's how you tell the difference between them. This one's made by Sony and that one's, you know, a knockoff. It's a copy. So Lord Kapildev analyzes the characteristics of all of these elements in the third canto. What are the qualities of water? What are the qualities of fire? What are the qualities of air? Like one quality of water, what are some of the qualities of water? Yeah, but like one quality is that if you mix it with something, the volume increases. That's a quality of water. One of the qualities of water. Another quality is? What does it do for you? Quenches your thirst. Air doesn't do that. Fire doesn't do that. Earth doesn't do that. Nothing else does it. Water does it. It quenches thirst. It expands the volume of something. Every milk dealer knows that. So these are some of the qualities of water. Ether gets very interesting. I'd have to look and see precisely what he says, but one thing he says is that ether provides the accommodating space for things. If you think about that, you say, well, I'm sitting on the earth, okay, but it's not exactly, you know, it's only the soles of your feet that are on the earth. Where's the rest of you? Is it in the air? No, it's not in the air. The air is what's around the rest of you, right? You've displaced the air. You know, there's a certain portion that's not occupied by air because you're there. But now, you know, where are you? Follow what I mean? You're in space. Now, what exactly is space? It's where you put things. It's what it is. It's where you put things. Without space, nothing goes anywhere. Nothing fits anywhere. You know, this kartal is not just in the air, although it's surrounded by air. It's not the air that's making room for the kartal. It's space. Now, what the hell is space? It's a very subtle thing. But without it, there's no room for anything. So that's one of the characteristics of ether. It provides space for everything. It's that subtle element that provides space for everything. Then it's also explained in second canto that there are subtle forms that are existing within ether. And Prabhupada talks about electronic things and so on as existing within space. Exactly. Prabhupada uses those terms interchangeably, by the way, space and ether. He doesn't by space mean outer space, but he means ether or cum, this subtle element. Sometimes he calls it space, sometimes he calls it ether, usually one of those two. Jaga, space. Yeah. The place where you can put something, exactly. Well, ultimately, everything comes from space. Because from space comes the next element, the next element. Now, how much of that? Yeah, it seems like these like television pictures and like all around us right now. You know, there's conversations going on. And hi, I'm in Calcutta, and where are you? Oh, well, I'm in Buenos Aires. Really? What do you? You know, how long are you going to be there? Where is all that? It's someplace. In space. And we hear that it has subtle effects even, because someone was saying that the coconuts have been affected by these radio towers. Huh? The Mayapur Vasis are saying that the coconut production has been affected by these mobile towers. The coconuts are smaller or something like that. So it gets subtle. You know, they're messing around with these subtle things, and it has subtle effects, which can add up and become gross effects. Anyway, Prabhupada said in the second canto that the study of ether provides a fertile field for research by scientists.
So it means, in essence, to be spaced out is that best
down to the earth.
Aparayam itas tvanyam prakriti vidhi me param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. Itaha, apart from this, which is apara, inferior energy, apareya itas tu anyam, prakriti vidhi me param. I have a superior energy. Para means superior, and apara means inferior. So apart from this inferior energy that I've just told you about, there's also a superior energy. What is that? Jiva Bhuta, the living entity. He's the superior energy. I've told you all about I've enumerated these eight material elements. Those are inferior, but there is a superior energy also, Jiva Bhuta. Yaya idam daryate jagat. Daryate means, here Prabhupada gives as utilizing or exploiting. It can also mean sustaining.
That's why it's in Mahabaho. Mahabaho.
Sustaining. So the material world is, how is the material world sustained by the living entities? It's their persistent attempt to exploit and use it. That's what's keeping the material world going. And Prabhupada explains, while exploiting the gross and subtle inferior energy, the superior energy forgets his real spiritual mind and intelligence. Oh, I didn't talk about the subtle energies. We skipped them. Kam, mano, buddhi, and ahamkar. What is mind? What are the characteristics of mind? Especially?
Accepting and rejection.
Someone, tell me what the mind is saying. Just give me a mind accepting and rejecting. You give me a monologue. Give me a mental monologue. Give me the mind. Some here. Who's mental? Okay. Give me a beat the mind about any something.
Well, the mind's trying to...
No, don't be. Tell me what the mind... You're the mind.
Oh. This is getting boring, isn't it? Are you a little bit tired? Maybe something else could be great right now that'd be boring.
That's only half the mind. What's the other half?
This is Bhagavad Gita. You need this knowledge. This is a great opportunity to hear from Jai Winters.
Yeah, now let's have the mind going the other way again.
You don't want to do this anymore. Aren't you getting tired?
Well...
But this is really nectar. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, but...
But if I left right now, I might be able to line up some pizza by lunch.
Yeah, on the other hand...
But if I stay, I could be... find the key to liberation and solve all my problems and go back home, back to God.
But?
Well, I start to feel a little tired.
That's the mind.
Yes.
Good, you did that beautifully. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's the mind. On the one hand, well, I think I kind of like, you know, this class is getting interesting, but I'm starting to feel kind of tired. But on the other hand, you know, I'm really learning something here. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, I'm really missing something over there. But I should really stay here at least to hear about. But I don't really want to. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, who cares what you want? Well, I care what I want, you know. Bung, 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 bung. So you meet somebody who's really on the mental platform, and it's like, you know, watching a tennis match. You know, it's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Sankalpa vikalpa, accepting and rejecting, accepting and rejecting. Now, what's the intelligence do? What does the intelligence do?
Defeats the demoniac thought.
Yeah, how does it do that? Even demonic or not demonic, what does the mind do? Yeah, how does it do that?
Reasoning.
Reasoning. The intelligence reasons about things. The mind is, I want to, no, I don't want to, I want to. The mind analyzes. You know? It looks at it and sorts out all that static and says, you know, this stuff about the pizza is just, you know, just your senses out of control, and you're not really tired, you're always tired, you know, as soon as it comes time to hear Bhagavad Gita, that's when your, you know, your sleep hormones come in. And yeah, you don't like the speaker, but you always don't like the speaker when you're sitting, and then later you decide it wasn't so bad. So, and besides, it's your duty to hear, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and okay, we're going to do it. And when it's reached a conclusion, that's it. It's decided. I'm going to buy something. I'm going to buy an MP3 player. But do I, you know, here it is. But do I really need it? You know, everybody else has one. But do I, well, I kind of like to have one, but I don't know if I can afford it. But, you know, it's really a nice thing to have. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But then when you finally sit down and say, well, here's how much money I have. Here are the other things I need money for. Here's what I could do with it. Here are the problems that it'll probably give me. Here's how long it'll last. Given all of these things, okay, how does it tally up? And then you either say, nope, just complicate my life further, one more gadget, and besides I can't afford it. Or you say, well, it's not really so much money, and I have a lot of use for it, so let's go out and get it. So that's intelligence. It decides... It's decisive by analysis.
So the argument is really between the mind and the intelligence. It's not the mind.
Not necessarily. Intelligence can be out to lunch. Not even entering into the argument. We see some people, there's just no sign of intelligence, even on vacation 6 years ago and hasn't been seen since. Sorry?
Does not understand the position of a construction worker.
I mean, there are people, there's just not much intelligence and evidence, really. It's more the senses, and, you know, if the mind gets in there, we're doing good. But from another point of view, yeah, intelligence is there, and according to our, what happens really, we read earlier, The mind, the senses pull on the mind, and the mind pulls on the intelligence, and now the intelligence is misengaged in providing justification, rationalization for what the senses want. Well, you can't really afford it, but gee, you know, you can put it on your credit card, and you won't have to pay for it for a long time, and it'll really be a valuable thing. And it's, you know, you may never use it actually, but the mind has already decided that you want it, and so it said to the intelligence, "Hey, give me some reasons, okay?"
Plus, I don't have to be attentive in the class.
Yeah, I don't have to be attentive in class. I can, you know, I'll wear my hood, and under the hood, I'll have you know, the speakers plugged in, and I'll be listening to Anoop Jalota. What's that?
Tina Turner.
I don't even know. Okay, I'll be listening to something. So that's how the intelligence becomes degraded. But the function of the intelligence is analysis. Function that intelligence can be misused. They're using their intelligence to create something, you know, that can blow people up. That requires intelligence. The ability to analyze and discriminate, but misused. What's a hum car? What is false ego? I've never heard of Krishna, so I don't think about it. I have nothing to do with Krishna.
I'm me, I have to look by myself.
I'm me and mine.
False identification? I'm this body.
I'm me and mine.
I'm me and mine. Dehatma Buddhi. That's a humkar. Literally means I'm the doer. I'm thinking that I'm the doer of everything. Prabhupada explains that ahankar is so subtle, it's not exactly matter, but it's not spirit. It's the point at which they touch. Everybody hold up your thumb and first finger. And now I want you to meditate, not on your thumb and not on your finger, but on that exact place where the two meet. Difficult, but it's there, isn't it? But it's very subtle. That place is neither your thumb nor your finger, but it's where the two meet. It's the meeting place. So sometimes Prabhupada explains that a humkar is the meeting place between matter and spirit. I'm spirit. That's my real identity. I have nothing to do with matter. Sango hiyam punta. Matter has nothing to do with me. But I identify myself with matter. That's the beginning point. False ego. What is it? It's not something I am, it's something I'm not. But I identify with something that I'm not. That touching point. You know, why am I in touch with matter at all? What do I have to, you know, like, what am I doing with this girl? That false ego, that point is, I have something to do with matter. What is that something to do? I can enjoy it. I can control it. Finally, it's what I am.
Thoughts are the dominion of mind or intelligence or ego?
Thoughts are the dominion of mind or intelligence or ego. Thinking. Finally, it's the dominion of soul. Mind is a machine. It doesn't think anything. Intelligence doesn't really think anything. But when the soul uses the mind and intelligence to think in a certain way. We have nothing to do with these thoughts. You know, I'm tired, I want this, I want that. Or if you put this, 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 and this, then you'll reach the conclusion. And this, this, that. I have nothing to do with all that. It's all, you know, noise of the material energy. How did I become associated with that? By thinking on this thought.
Just
like somebody says, you know, I feel I've spent so much time in devotional service, you know, going out on Sankirtan, and I've lost touch with myself. And I have to get more in touch with myself. Now, okay, maybe there's something legitimate there, but too often what it means is I need to get in touch with my emotions, my feelings, my desires, with who I really am. In other words, I have to start identifying my body and mind with myself and getting more lined up with that instead of being lined up with devotional service to Krishna. That's not to say that, there's not a place for proper intellectual and emotional development, but it's to say that we mistake our feelings for ourselves. These feelings, I just need to be I need to be valued. I need to be this. I need to be that. It's not exactly it's the mind. It's coming from, it's the subtle self. It's not like I need to eat, like a man. I need to, go out there and grab some pretty woman and enjoy. It's not that gross, sensual stuff. It's on the subtle platform of, need to get more in touch with myself. And what is that self? That self is... Well, no, it's the product of the false ego in terms of the mind and its, blah, 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 blah.
So false ego generates mental intelligence and that generates...
It all comes generated from false ego. False ego is like the root from which everything... And you find that in second and third canons, how the elements proceed from false ego, from one... analysis. The whole material world is generated from false ego.
Since thoughts are coming from before false ego, it's only much lighter, much more subtler.
Before false ego? No, false ego is the subtlest material.
So thoughts, where do thoughts?
The soul is, ultimately thoughts are on the spiritual platform. I'm thinking of how to serve Krishna. But when thought comes in touch with matter, then it becomes polluted. So then it's like water in touch with some junk, some chemicals or something. It's still water, but now it's, got arsenic in it and all this other stuff.
So in the material realm, thoughts are coming from the ego.
Thoughts are coming from all over the place. They're coming from the senses. Think about this. And you're getting it through your eyes, or getting it through your ears, and now it's lodging in your subtle body, right? I mean, that's what advertising is. How to get it through one of your gross senses into your subtle body. Think about how good it would feel for you to be sitting in a brand new car. Second. Take corners in a fraction of a second. That can tear up the road, So those thoughts are coming from, they're entering through the ear holes, and then they start churning around in the subtle body. The mind, the mind starts becoming the repository for all these ideas. And pretty soon you have a mind which is full of, zoom, zoom. And and subtle, nice, beautiful melodies and perfumes and the mind is full of all this stuff. The mind becomes a repository of thoughts. Prabhupada gives the example that it's like double exposure on cameras. You shoot a picture and then you don't wind it. Now there's no film to wind. In the old days when there was film to wind, if you didn't wind the film, then you take the next shot over that. And so you get a picture of your grandmother standing over the picture of the swings, standing over the picture of the pig in the gutter in Vrindavan, standing over all these images get superimposed, and you've soon got all sorts of stuff going on. Well, that's what you get, like dreams, where you've got all this crazy stuff going on with 17 different channels playing all at once. The mind becomes like that. It's filled with so many thoughts and purposes. And we're thinking that these thoughts have something to do with me. Actually, it has nothing to do with me. What in hell do I have to do with thinking about any of this stuff? You know, thinking about getting elected president of the United States. What in the world does a spirit soul have to do with thinking about becoming president of the United States? My country. You know, what in, where in the world does a spirit soul get the idea that this country is his? This country where he lives for, you know, 50 or 100 years max. Where does he get that crazy idea? Where does he get the, you know, idea that, that he has something to do with Susie? Where does he get the idea that he has something to do with, you know, this and that and the other thing? This is my, you know, that I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm white, I'm black, I'm this, I'm that. I got to stand up for my rights. I got to this. Mind becomes full of all this, all of this, all of this, all of this. Why? Because it's in touch with matter. Why is it in touch with matter? Because it's all in matter. And because it's in touch with matter, so now all the stuff is coming into the senses. It's got, you know, five channels, which, you know, always, you know, it's turn, all turned on at once, and reception coming in. So this is the subtle body, which has to be purified by touch with Krishna. The senses have to be purified by being engaged in connection with Krishna. Then mind becomes purified, being in touch with Krishna. So we purify the subtle body, or earlier we thought, said, Brahma, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir. So the process of spiritualizing the material energy. So we engage the gross elements and the subtle elements in Krishna service. And gradually get free from false ego. Okay? Yes? Yes. Soul is not material. In Sankhya philosophy, you go through all these 24 elements, and there they are. Those are all the... Yeah, and you can analyze it. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. This is five senses, active senses, five knowledge-gathering senses, the mind, on and on. You get finally 24 elements. Then the soul is the 25th element. He's the 25th element. Then the Lord is the 26th element. Super soul is the 26th. In Lord Kapila Dev's philosophy. Devahuti Krishna. So the idea is that aparayam, as Krishna says, there are energies. I have these inferior energies. Then there's a superior energy of mine. It's not in these 24. It's above them. Then look one past that, there's the super soul. So in that way you analyze everything. You analyze the whole material world. If you're going by not this, not this, okay, I'm not any one of those 24 elements. What am I? Well, I must be a spirit soul. Well, but I'm not the ultimate. Well, there must be another. That way you get 26 elements. Yes?
Material space is ether.
Yeah. Excuse me?
The material space is called ether.
Yeah.
Spiritual space is called?
Vaikuntha. Paravyom. Yom is... atmosphere? So paravyam. Spiritual atmosphere. Superior atmosphere. So, yes?
No, but the soul is superior to all the material elements. So, then how does it get overwhelmed by these?
Yeah, good question. Soul is superior. How does it get overwhelmed by these inferior energies? And, yes? Krishna says, you know, no good reason, essentially. You know, he really has no business being here. But it's just vimukha chetasa, indriya. What is that? Anadi bahirmukhi, bhogavantaka. Since time immemorial, he's bahirmukh. He's looking in the opposite direction. He's looking away from Krishna. Why bhogavantaka? He has some idea he's going to be happy. And what's the result?
Mind slapping.
That's illusion. He has nothing to do with material energy. Not possible to enjoy the material energy. Not what to speak of control the material energy. He's totally bound hand and foot. And he's thinking, Ishiro hum hum pogi siddhalam. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm happy, I'm this thing. Totally suckered by the material energy. Okay, let's find out what that is. Text 5. 4. Paramatma, where are you looking? It's a big purport. Huh? It's a big paragraph. Point me where you're looking. You said second paragraph. I see. There's a line there. Okay. Your temporary means like this. Sometimes there's a Kumbh Mela. And when they have the Kumbh Mela, as you know, millions of people come. Lakhs and crores of people come. So what does the police department do? Yeah, they get in there and they establish a police, what do you call them?
Department.
Yeah, they establish a police headquarters in the Kumbh Mela. And they've got security guys and they've got this and they've got that, and they try to keep people from stampeding and killing one another and all of that kind of stuff. And they're outposts, exactly. They make a police outpost there at the Kumbh Mela with the blue and red stripes, and everything is there. And then they stay for as long as the Kumbh Mela is there, then what happens? They go back. Yeah, but you're not here always. You're not always going to be in the material world. In fact, the material or in this body, in this earth. In fact, the body's not always going to be here. The earth's not always going to be here. Even the whole material cosmic manifestation is not always going to be here. So when it's wound up, what does the super soul do? There's okay, no need for me here. Does that clarify the matter? Okay. Yes?
So, we can understand from this knowledge that the living entity is not connected with matter. But still, it said the living entity suffers and enjoys. So, is the living entity actually suffering, experiencing suffering or enjoying, or is that all an illusion?
It's all an illusion.
It actually is experiencing nothing at all.
He's experiencing it, but what he's experiencing it is nonsense. Just like if a tiger eats you in a dream. Are you suffering? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Prabhupada gives the example that a man sees a beautiful woman in a dream and there may be nocturnal discharge. How is it possible? The beautiful woman's there, but is she there? No. It's meaningless. It's meaningless. But under illusion, in a dreaming state, we think, oh my God, oh my God. I'm embracing the most beautiful woman in the world, whatever it is. It has no meaning. Kapil Dev says it's like the position of a person seeing his head cut off in a dream. What does it mean? It means you're okay. But because you're seeing your head cut off, you're thinking, oh my God, my head's cut off.
Because we've identified ourselves with that.
Yeah, you're an illusion. So this happiness, distress, this, that, it has no meaning. But we attach enormous significance to it. You know, all everything that's in the New York Times is very significant. You know, a very important article appeared today in the New York Times. And what does Sukadeva Goswami say it is? Babble of Sea Wave. Wait a second, that's the New York Times. America's newspaper of record. That's the whole material world. It's all blah, 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 blah. And we're thinking it's very important. Okay? So very essential knowledge. Simple point of the difference between matter and spirit, which the whole material world just doesn't get. People don't understand it. Etad yonini bhutani sarvani tupadharya aham krishnasya jagata prabhavas pralayas tata. All created beings have their source in these two natures. That's a line left out of the first edition, by the way. They have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual, I'm the origin and the dissolution. You need that line, by the way, for the logic. There's the gross material energy, subtle material energy, then the superior spiritual energy, and I'm the source of all of them. Therefore, I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from either of these two natures, either the material or spiritual. They both come from me, so I'm the origin of everything. That's what Krishna is saying here. And then, mata parataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. There's nothing superior to me. Mata parataram. Higher than me, kinchit, just kashchit, kinchit, related terms. Something, something. Mata, higher than me. Paratara. Kinchit asti. Na. Anya. There's nothing else. There's nothing superior to me. Sarvakarana karanam. You're looking for the ultimate point from which everything originates. That's me. Mata parataram na anya. No, Shiva is higher. No, nothing's higher. No, Vishnu is higher. No, nothing's higher. Na anya. Nothing else is higher than Krishna. Mata parataram na anya kinchi asti. Nothing is higher than me. You need a picture. Mayi sarvamidam protam sutre maniganai. Just as pearls are strung on a thread, everything is resting on them. What can I say? I'll come to it in a second. But mayi sarvamidam protam, you have a woman's wearing a beautiful pearl necklace, but without the thread, where's the necklace? Scattered. Everything depends on that thread. Everything's resting on that. Everything rests on Krishna. What do the Mayavadis say? They say, oh, Krishna doesn't mean Krishna. Krishna stands for blah, blah, blah.
Because they say they give the argument that from the Mahatattva first came the three modes of material nature.
Yeah.
So Brahman accepts those material nature and takes a form. So by that, he's representing himself.
Why does Brahman take a form?
Yeah, they say
where there's no thoughts or feelings or there's no differentiation in Brahman. So why should Brahman decide to take a form?
Exactly.
That's stupid. Yeah.
This is this point, Divagoswami by this.
Cuts him.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no reason. Brahman doesn't decide anything. You know, Brahman's one. So where do you get desire to do this? I shall do this. Krishna's person, he says, I shall descend, I shall. Why he has thoughts, he has feelings, he has desires. But Brahman has no thought, no feeling, no desire. Why should it, you know, do anything?
Does Brahman, according to Bhagavad, does Brahman have experience?
No. No. Brahman is the total reality in which there's no distinction between the experiencer, the experienced. There is no that duality between that which is experienced and that which is experiencing. Is annihilated, so then there's no experience. There's only existence.
What does it do?
It exists. Not for anything, it exists.
Neutral state.
It exists. That's all you can say about it. Pretty boring. Excuse me? You can't say it. You can say all you want, but it doesn't really mean anything because it's just words, da-da-da-da-da. Because Brahman is achincha, inconceivable. It's beyond words, beyond form, beyond da-da-da-da-da-da. Anything you say about it, it's not really da-da-da-da-da. Shall we do a little more? And okay. Yes, Mr. Avatar? Then you can say that if taking Vishnu and Krishna to be the same, then he's not higher than Krishna. Or taking it from another angle of vision, Krishna is the original source of Vishnu, so he's even higher, you can say, than Vishnu, although they're the same. But in either case, Vishnu is not higher than Krishna. That's also there. Krishna is the source, he's the original, but someone's more attracted to Ram. Someone's more attracted to Nrisingadev. Someone's more attracted to some other form of the Lord.
Srila Prabhupada's desire for his followers were only Krishna. For example, in Radha Rasbari Mandir Juhu, he said to Giriraj Maharaj that even we should not chant Ram's name, only on Ram Navami, maybe for some time, and then that's it. Don't focus even on Ram.
Yeah. Okay. In this next section, it's a very nice poetic section, really. Similar in some ways to the 10th chapter, where Krishna is giving us different ways of thinking of himself. Rasoham opsukontiya prapasmi shashi suryayo pranavasarva vedeshu Shabda K, Parusham Nrishu. This is philosophy, Prabhupada said, to meditate on verses such as these and try to understand how Krishna is present. Krishna says, I'm the taste of the water. So what does that mean exactly? So you drink water, you get the taste, and if you think, now, how is it that this taste is Krishna? You try to appreciate that Krishna is present in this water. In that way, one becomes self-realized. Prabhasmi sashi suryayo. The sun is there during the day, the moon is there at night. So this sun and moon are Krishna. So the light of the sun and moon, that's Krishna. During this, when the sun is shining and we're getting some nice warmth, when the moon is shining, we're getting some relief from too much sun. That's Krishna. Prabhasmi sashi surya. In this way, one appreciates. Even the... Let him carry on. The... You know, there are people who try to see nature as, you know, see God in nature. Well, that's all right. But Krishna makes it personal. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by thinking of nature, you can think of me. Just meditating on nature is not going to get you any place, but when you meditate on nature in relation to me, you start to become God-realized. That's there in second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam as the first step in God-realization, to start to see the entire cosmic manifestation as an extension of Krishna's presence, or is representing Krishna's presence. So Krishna is giving us this opportunity to meditate on him. Pranava sarva vedeshu. In all the Vedic hymns, there's a vibration, Om. So Krishna says, when you vibrate that sound, that's me. Or shabda ke. When you hear any sound, that's also me. When there's some power within a human being, Parusham Nrishu, I'm that power. In this way, Krishna is giving us ways to think of him. Punyo Gandha Prativyam Cha. The earth has its own natural fragrance. So when you smell that fragrance of the earth, that's me. That's me. Tejas Chasmi Bhivavaso. The heat and the fire, that's me. Jivanam Sarvabhuteshu. The living force in all living beings, that's me. Tapas Chasmi Tapasvishu. The power of austerity within ascetics, that's me. In this way, one appreciates the presence of Krishna, all pervading by his different energies. Some question? Yeah?
I heard that water has no taste. They say like this, water has no taste.
Krishna says, I'm the taste.
Maybe
distilled water, but Krishna never says, I'm the taste of distilled water. I went to Melbourne back in 1976. I think it was 78, 79, like that. The water was so tasty. By drinking this water, just the water was tasty. It was so good. If by drinking this water, you'd get an appetite. You'd get hunger drinking the water. It was just phenomenal how tasty this water was. It was just tasty. Now it's like regular water anyplace else. It's changed. I've been there more recently. It's gone. But that pure water was so good. That's the water. Water as Krishna makes it available in its natural tasty form before we put all the junk in it or distill it or add this or add that. Just natural water is so tasty. That's Krishna. Yes. You had something? Yes, you might.
It's a little bit of topic of before.
Yes.
About the intelligence.
Yeah. Here. Something about the intelligence and mind from before.
Yes, so as you were saying, the mind has an effect on the intelligence, pulling it down. False egos has an effect on intelligence.
Pulling it down
also. And then, so...
Because real intelligence is spiritual intelligence.
Okay.
So, that intelligence gets covered by the false ego.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how does intelligence, in what way does it help the mind or change?
When the mind and intelligence are fixed on Krishna, then they become very good.
And on the false ego, how does the intelligence act on the false
ego? Says the false ego, you know, you're nonsense, you're a false ego. Let's get to real ego here. That's intelligence. I've had enough of you. What have you done for me all these years? I've listened to you all this time, and you know, what good is it? I've identified myself with the body and mind for all these years, and what do I have to show for it? Scars. Enough of you. I'm going for real ego. I'm going to serve Krishna. I'm not what you're telling me I am. I'm spirit soul. I'm servant of Krishna.
That's
Divya Gan, spiritual. Yeah, Divya Gan, spiritual knowledge, Divya Buddhi. What is that? Buddhi Yoga Dadami. Okay. We are at the end of our time, really. So we will come back tomorrow and continue this. Well, let's see, will we? We have two verses here more on this. Yeah, we'll continue tomorrow. We don't have to. Should we? Finish it? Who's for finishing them now? Who's for tomorrow? Wow. I think the tomorrow slightly had the edge. Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta bhakta vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande.